Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
So now today we're going into paranormal, and we have a great guest, and she's written a great book. It's called Portal. And it's a lifetime of paranormal experiences, and it came out December of last year. And so she's sitting with us, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the book and the experiences. And we've got Adele Casellas Rocha.
Rocha.
I'm learning. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Julie. I'm very happy to be here.
So let's start out. First of all, now, what got you into the paranormal period? Like, how did you get involved into this enough where you're writing a book and doing interviews?
Well, Alan, that's a very long story, but, you know, to try to make it as brief as possible, I was born in the 60s, and in the neighborhood that I lived in happened to be in the Philippines. I lived in a little town that is approximately about, I would say, 50 miles outside of Manila. At the time, it was a very sleepy little suburb. There was no traffic. It had all sorts of things going on, as in good things, you know, that there were a lot of commerce. We were getting a lot of goods from Europe. To just preface all this, so as not to confuse the audience, the Philippines is strategically in the center of the Pacific Rim. And what I mean by that is it's right next to China, below Japan, and Thailand is kind of like by its feet. Australia is probably about a 4 or 5 hour flight right below. So when you're thinking about the hub of Asia, the Philippines is right in the center of that. That is important to remember in terms of its cultural backdrop. The Philippines was occupied by the Spanish from Spain for 400 years. At that point, there was a lot of commerce coming from Europe. And Julie, you coming from the UK, yes. We had a lot of goods coming from anywhere from biscuits to jackets to even the vehicles, the Range Rover and things of that nature. We also got cars from France, from Italy. We had goods from all over Europe because of the connection with Spain. Okay, now that's just my digressing into something to just give you a cultural backdrop to that. At the close of that, entering into the late 1930s, we, as Europe did, encountered World War II. And during that time, there were massacres. On our end, it was the Japanese. In Europe, it was the Germans. It was obviously havoc. There was a lot of people who were fleeing for their lives as far as the civilians. And being a very small country, you could just imagine the immediate effect on the country at large. We have neighbors, and I'm walking through the book through three generations of a family, but at the same time, I've also interspersed stories from people who have encountered ghosts and demonic beings, as well as cryptids, and actually aliens, UFOs, and things of that nature, because I tend to travel. Since I've moved to the States, I've been traveling since 1982, and it's all for leisure. So the book is an amalgamation of a family's experience through a demonic influence. At the same time, also eyewitness reports of people that I've encountered through those years that I've traveled. I've, at this point, traveled through 26 different countries. So some of them, of course, is just a regular vacation. I really didn't get to talk to anyone about anything paranormal or ufologically bent. But for some of them, it became a very interesting, not just photographing, since I do travel photography, but also talking to the local people, you know, which is the best way to really visit a foreign country. But my interest started because of the neighborhood that I was in. Because after World War II, when houses started to come up again, people started getting on with their lives. Then we start seeing the unquiet. What is the effect of an uproar, a chaos, and something so traumatic as a world war on the local people, not just on the people that were there, but also on the soldiers that were killed as a result of the war? And what you're seeing in this book is the ghostly apparitions, hauntings, the activity that happens when you have numerous tragedies in one space and time in a particular area.
Hmm. Do you find, coming from the Philippines, how is the paranormal perceived over there, ghosts and all that? How do they accept it or not accept it, or how is it compared to, let's say, the U.S. or Canada or England or something?
I think that in terms of cultural understanding, it probably is closest to the way England accepts it or sees it. Because we're also an old country. For instance, the U.S. is only about 200 some odd years. I know it's been through a civil war, but it's never been through a war that is of such a large magnitude that it would lose millions of people. And so what happens is when you create havoc of such a scale that it is so evil, the aftermath never leaves you. And with the Filipino people, because they are 99.9% Roman Catholic, they accept the existence of ghosts. They accept because they see them. They encounter them a lot. In the houses they reside in, there are homes there that were built in the 1700s and were left standing, and, you know, some were renovated, you know, still lived in. People rarely move to different areas. So generations of families lived in the same house and have seen a lot of things. So they do accept it. They know it's real when they talk about demonic or ghostly influence. What they're not so accepting of is if it's something like, you know, from a different planet, for example, a humanoid or an alien. That one is a little bit more different because they haven't had as many encounters of that, or at least their interpretation is not that it's alien. Their interpretation usually is that whatever it is, if it's bad, it's a, you know, demonic infestation. If it's good, maybe it is an angel or even God.
So Adele, the book's about really your family and your journey and your understanding of different cultures and beliefs and people's experiences.
It is, to an extent, my family. It's also a lot of stories that come from me, from people that I have talked to and encountered just by being there at the right place and the right time. I think it's interesting that somehow when you are interested in something in particular, like attracts like, and so the people who have the same or similar experience are drawn to you because they know you will be more accepting of what they have to tell you. You're going to be less critical and more open about it. And they're seeking answers. They're seeking to understand that they're heard and that maybe there's an explanation for why, you know, or whatever it is that they saw.
And do you think that, I suppose, at what point in your journeys, in your travels, did you fully believe in the existence of the paranormal? And what elements of the paranormal did you first believe in? So was your first early experiences and validations around ghost apparitions, or was it more about UFOs or Bigfoot, or where was your real kind of first anchoring into your belief system?
Julie, I would have to say that because I have been exposed to ghosts and homes that are infested by demonic beings and, you know, all of those things that we can't explain that are uncanny, it would have to be those first. The UFOs came later. I think I was about probably 13 or 14 years old. I was actually already here in the U.S. When a story came my way about an elderly woman who actually saw a UFO over the roof of their house. And because I was open already to the alternate reality theories and have an understanding that not everything we see, feel, or hear is the only reality, I was receptive to that. But I didn't really completely get immersed in ufology until I actually probably about a couple of years before I joined MUFON.
And what was your early experiences with UFOs that led you to believe that?
I think that a lot of it, Julie, has to do with whether I wanted to believe that they were from another world, because I refuse to, I cannot believe we're the only ones here. I cannot believe with, yes. So I, you know, when you look at that, the panoply of life that is out there and how large and immense the universe is, I just cannot understand why people feel we're the only ones here that have populated this planet. There must be other life forms, not just in this solar system, but in other galaxies. And there could be, if you believe in multidimensionality, and I have had encounters with those as a child, then there must be also multidimensional beings that are not necessarily quote-unquote dead, but are actually just living in a different plane of existence. Something very different from ours.
Okay, so that's interesting. So I need to take you back, Adele. So thinking about that extra dimensional and the possibility of our extra dimensional existences, parallel universes, and those kind of theoretical explanations for many things, deja vu, apparitions, life journeys. At what point when you were younger did you have an understanding of that, and what was the experience that led to it? Because that's really complex theoretical hypotheses, and many people will rely on, I mean, we've interviewed lots of different people who have kind of beliefs that mm-hmm. lead them to believe in those things, or there's a scientific element that leads them to believe. So what was it for yourself, and at such an early age as well?
Okay, so I'm going to be a little bit more concrete and more transparent. Okay. I've only done this with only one other radio show, and this was back probably about a year ago. Because we are primarily talking to the West Coast, I will say this, and I know that people are very open-minded out there. I was probably about 2 years old when we started to realize that we were living in an infested apartment. And when I say infested, my father was primarily the person, the focus of the infestation. About 3 miles outside of my grandmother's house, there is a hamlet. It's called Little Baguio. Baguio, B-A-G-U-I-O. It's kind of a tricky name to give. At the time in the 60s, Little Baguio was very much just your little byway. There was probably one grocery store. There was probably like a little corner store for gasoline. And that's about it. But what they did was they started building townhouse apartments, two-floor dwellings, you know, with the ground floor and the first floor.
Yep.
And there was one that was built, and there was probably, I would say, about 6 residences to 8 residences. Not to bore you, I'm trying to give you a setting and a backdrop.
Yeah.
Like I said, I tend to be long-winded. Behind the apartment is a creek. And there are sheltering trees that border the creek on both sides. And just a few yards away from that are the backs of these townhomes where they have huge windows that face out to the creek. So it's actually very lovely because if you rented there, when you walked in, you will see first the living room and then right from the living room, you will see a huge window that stretches practically all the way to the ceiling.
Lovely.
And then to your right, you will walk into the kitchen, the foyer, and then there's a stairwell, and underneath the stairwell, there's a servant's quarters. And usually, because it's only an apartment, there's only room for one overnight servant. Upstairs, you have 3 bedrooms, and in the middle of that, there is a den, and my father was a writer. He did it full-time, right out of college. On either side of him, one side was the nursery, the other side was the master bedroom. He was the focus of an infestation. At least that is my interpretation of it, although at some point I thought maybe it was a thought form, which would mean he manufactured it out of his own mind. But no one else believes that but me.
Can you just explain to our UK listeners what you mean by infestation? Because that's not actually a term that we would normally use here in the UK in paranormal.
Okay. So when I talk about someone who is in the stages of possession, there's usually 3 phases of that, and I'm not an authority by any means. You know, this is only through books that I have read. And please, I stand corrected. If you know better, please do tell me. My father was a very depressed man. He had been depressed for a while. No one really knows the nature of where that began. A lot of people felt that it began because of this being or this entity that kept visiting him at nightfall. It got to the point where it was influencing his mind, his mood, so that he became more progressively depressed. He got to the point where his writing was affected. He was writing a lot of poetry, and it turned very dark. So it started to permeate his mind, and he felt at some point it was trying to take his soul, and that if he went to sleep, it would take him. That, to me, is an infestation, because it's like it's affecting the lifestyle, it's affecting the thinking, it becomes an obsession, and then at some point it becomes an obsession, which is the next stage. He obsesses over the being, it becomes the focal point of his life, and then the last would be possession. Hopefully we never got to possession, I don't think we did, but during the time that he was in residence in the apartment, I was the infant next door.
Okay. So, okay, I'm getting my head around this.
Okay, Julie.
So you would have been experiencing the dynamics in the family home around this possession. And at what age were you told about this as being an infestation or a possession, as opposed to dad's not well because he's got a mental health or a depressive episode? Or at what point were you introduced to that as a concept?
It's interesting how it evolved, Julie, because I did not even know that he had passed away.
Right.
Okay. Months and several months into it, and you know from the book how he passed.
Yes.
He apparently would not be admitted to the Roman Catholic Church because the priest felt, because of the cause of his death, that he could not be interred there or viewed there, and he could not be buried on holy ground. This is just the idea, you know, of the culture, because of the demonic influence, and that is what the priest called it. Who told me finally and sat down with me, I did not know until I was close to 4 years old. But the interesting part about it is, all this time, when people were couching their words around me very, very carefully, I knew exactly what had happened to him.
Okay.
And I can't explain how I know. To this day, when I went into kindergarten, people would ask me, how come your father never picks you up from school? How come it's always your mother, your grandmother, your uncle, et cetera, et cetera? And I would tell them the truth, that he slashed his wrists. I told them the truth. And no one ever told me that until finally I was in first grade, and one of the parents called my mother and said, do you know your daughter is friends with mine? And she's been telling her this is what happened to her father.
Very powerful.
So my mother was appalled. I came home from school to find she was there in the living room sitting with my grandmother and the rest of the family. I walked in and I thought maybe someone else had passed away because they just had a look on their face. And my grandmother approached me and she asked me, you know, your friend, her mother called us and told us what you have been telling her. And I turned white as a sheet and all the hair started standing on my arms. And my grandmother said, you know, he had emphysema. So they still did not tell me. So, Julie, I will tell you when I finally had verification. And this is the first time I'm going to tell this on the air. Are you ready for it?
We are.
You don't sound ready.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
Okay, so intrigued.
This is fascinating.
So, Julie, when I went to college and I stayed in the U.S., okay, we emigrated to the U.S., I went to a college, and then I was, I think I was 17 at the time. My mother, who was still a widow, she had not remarried, she said, I think it's time to go home and visit. So we jumped on the plane, you know, it was a 21-hour flight, but, you know, overnights, and you know how that is. And then I get there, and my father's grandfather invites us for dinner. And this is the home they've been living in, where the children were raised, where my father still has his bedroom. So we get there around, you know, we eat late. Around 7, we were there. And my mother was with me, and my father's brother, who was very close to him at that point, was married, and his wife was there. I'd never met his wife before. So we were sitting in the huge dining area. There were 11 children. My father's family had 11 children. So picture this huge, long dining room, and the servants are running all over the place because they had not been told there was going to be guests for dinner, and they're over in the pantry and killing chickens and the whole mayhem. Meanwhile, my aunt-in-law, okay, my father's brother's wife that I had not met, shut the door so we could have some privacy. And then we sat down at this huge table, and she proceeded to take out some photographs. Bear with me. As she is leaving through the photographs, she comes upon a piece of paper. And this is in the book. She takes the paper and puts it right in front of me, with my mother sitting on the one side, the grandfather sitting on the other, keenly watching my face. And she says, oh, by the way, she said, I found your father's death certificate. Here it is. I think you should have it. Wow. I look down on it. Julie, I'm telling you the truth. I am telling you the truth. I looked down on it, and it was exactly as I envisioned.
How did you make sense of that?
Okay, so let me tell you what happened in the next few seconds. After it all came together, that all those years since I was a young child, I had known. We were sitting in a huge room. One side had all windows. They were all shut. They were shut because we didn't want the mosquitoes. We didn't want, you know, whatever, yeah, flies. We were, yeah, preparing for dinner. Suddenly, all the hairs on the back of my head started to stand. My arms, I was shivering. The room temperature plummeted. And then all the windows opened simultaneously, and about a million cockroaches assailed the room.
Oh.
So we all stood up, and the servants came in with brooms and fly swatters trying to get rid.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Of whatever this was that just suddenly came in.
That's horrid.
And we were running up the stairs to the second floor to get away from them. They were swatting them, hitting them on the floor. We, you know, some of the food had already been brought out. It was still covered. They took the food away. And then suddenly, as fast as it began, they all disappeared. Just spontaneously disappeared.
And what was the reaction of your family?
Well, I mean, I had just met this woman, and she looked at me, and my mother said she didn't know. And the woman said, I am so sorry. And she could not believe what was happening. And I had the epiphany of finally getting validation that all those years I knew. And my grandfather, he was clutching his chest like he was going to have a heart attack.
So, a young age, all of those things have now happened.
Mm-hmm.
How did you still make sense of that? Because as a young person, that is, on the one hand, it's an amazing experience. And on the other hand, that's very scary.
Oh, yes.
So how did you, and with the support of your family, make sense of it for you to be able to then go further into your adolescence and explore more about the paranormal?
I didn't have much family support.
Right.
And okay. it was one of those things, and the style of my family is to kind of sweep it under the rug. So my mother was like, should we just go out to eat? Like as if nothing happened. Should we just go out to eat because now the food might be spoiled and there's things on the, whatever that were killed.
Safe and bringing the food back. Yeah.
And I mean, crazy. I'm not making light of it by laughing, but that was the reaction. And my grandfather said, oh, and then we'll just come back for ice cream. So my uncle, you know, was looking down at this letter, and he said, you know, I can't believe that happened. He was the only one who actually articulated that, and I'm just looking at him because I'm taking it all in, Julie. I mean, what do you say?
You'd be speechless. You just wouldn't understand it. You wouldn't.
No.
It would be so confusing.
No. Part of me was like, I'm settled. Now I understand that it's true. But how did I know? I don't remember.
Was there anything else around that time that made you feel that the reaction, the windows opening, the change of temperature? Did you feel like your dad was there?
Sometimes I do believe that he is. I will tell you an instance when I think I was about maybe six at the time. I was in my grandmother's nursery because, you know, after he passed away, my mother and I moved to my grandmother's house. And that house itself had a lot of spirits and they're not positive. I was in the nursery alone and all these things happen at nightfall. Okay, so, you know, the light is protection, obviously, and a lot of noise is protection. At night, it's silent and it's dark. And I was sitting by the windowsill, and I could have sworn that right outside he was out there. But he is not accompanied by anything positive. It's always a sense of dread.
And what do you think the purpose of that would be? Because I for one, and I'm totally respectful of your views and your beliefs, as I am
sure.
Everybody.
Yeah.
But I am really reserved and hesitant when we talk about demonic beings and evil encounters and the feeling of dread. And after having many experiences over many, many years, mm-hmm. I have never felt to be in a position that I'm not able to control or be out of. So having not had that type of experience personally, I struggle to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the purpose of a man that you loved coming back with that feeling of dread to his child?
And Julie, I don't know. The only thing I wonder about is because the grief on my mother's end is unresolved. The family has never openly talked about him. It has always been swept under the rug. So I think part of it is he is asking, maybe, perhaps, to be recognized for what he had done. But he is also telling us that maybe he's not in a good place because of what he chose to do, that he gave in to whatever it was. That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, of course, I welcome other explanations.
Have you thought of it? Because you've had so many different experiences. You know, this certainly, this line of questioning is not to teach you to suck eggs, for want of a better phrase. You know this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's about, I guess, it's, what have you done to find out the questions and the answers to your questions? Because through life, we find ourselves in situations that we just don't know the answer to, and we reach out to different people. And I'm a firm believer that we are put in situations that we need to be in, and we will find the person or the resolve that we need, because mm-hmm. we're meant to. So what did you do about it to try and understand? Have you visited mediums? Have you explored that avenue? Have you had messages yourself?
Well, Julie, I think that's a great question to ask, because I've done a myriad of things, not so much necessarily connected to what happened to him per se, or why the things that happened to him, as opposed to the lesson that it brings forward to us about the afterlife and the struggle between good and evil. Because I personally encountered evil. I also then became privy to encountering good. And because now it's very, very clear to me, all those things that they, you know, abstractly explain biblically, okay, with the archangels having a battle in heaven between good and evil, trying to capture souls and trying to, you know, all these things that we talk about, Dante's Inferno, they've become very real to me, that there is, in fact, I believe, an actual battle that is being waged between good and evil, between forces that are not within our control. I believe that. And I believe that some people on the planet are more easily corrupted than others. I believe that some are strong enough to stand up to them, and some are not. It just so happened my father perhaps was not strong enough, and he was a good person.
So does your belief system equate the battle of good and bad and in terms of biblical sense to every individual scenario?
So to every instance?
Because would it not be conceivable that I mean, if I looked at it in a totally different way, and forgive me, because again, I mean absolutely no malice whatsoever. But if we're thinking your father was troubled and he felt that actually things had come to a head and he wasn't able to control and live life in the way that he wanted to anymore, and so could not continue, would that have to be a battle between good and bad? Or is that just about somebody who's not able to cope in that moment?
There's two different theories about that. Mm. And I was trained actually as a therapist.
Yeah.
So we have conflicting points of view. And of course, my bend does not deny the religious underpinnings of someone's illness. Mm-hmm. When someone is troubled and someone feels a conflict between what they want and what is happening to them.
Yeah.
I always give it two reasons. One is a spiritual challenge for them to be able to find the meaning in the message, to be able to reconcile why something, a situation, is producing stress and conflict. The other one is just maybe making the right choices in order to reconcile the conflict. So one is more ephemeral, and the other one is more more practical. In the case of my father, I think what has happened, and this is just through the years as I think it through, he was a man who was very sensitive. And as he was growing up, there were things that were impacting him as an individual that other people would shrug off. I was told he was just a very, very sensitive person and very introspective. But because of that, what impacted him, he internalized, and eventually he became depressed. And here's my theory. When you have a mood and you continue to have it for a number of years, a number of, you know, several months, and I'm not talking just a passing sadness, I'm yes. talking clinical depression, I think you draw energies to you that feed on that. You know, every time we fear something, if it's for a survival value and it's a real fear, like an imminent plane crash, that's fine. But when you're fearing something and the fear has become so obsessive, you're drawing negative energies to you. And in the same manner, when you're joyful and you see the bounty and you see the glass is always half full as opposed to half empty, you draw positive energies to you. And it's all intention because we're in a field. We send energy out there. And the energy we send draws back to us the energy we want. Like, I want you to ask these questions, and now you're asking them, Julie, because I sent the energy. And Alan contacted me. I mean, there are some things, of course, it was just an email, et cetera, et cetera. But there's nothing coincidental, you see. That's my belief.
It's that, I mean, if we put that in very much layman's terms and back to basics, it's smile and the world will smile with you.
Right.
And if you don't, it won't. And I think, trying to understand from those early days, you've had this experience, you've understood that you've got it. There's been some sort of communication that's helped you understand your father's passing without you being told that formally in the physical sense.
Yes.
How did you then progress that? Have you thought about progressing that as a gift, so you were able to communicate at some level with something to understand that? Or was
Well, I would say that it made me more open to things like astral projection. Okay. It made me more open to try to think about how to connect with spirits. And I don't mean an Ouija board or anything like that. I was even reading about remote viewing and things of that nature. Things a normal teenager would not be reading about.
Yes,
And because I sent out that intention and that energy, of course, there were people along the way that came. I mean, I did meet a few mediums, you know. I actually even met a medium who did past life readings. And I'm a proponent of reincarnation. I'm not embarrassed to say that. I do believe we've been here for a lot of times. And when someone is afraid to pass away, you know, I think you've been through this. You just don't remember. And then you'll be back again. So I delved in that as a teenager. I looked through all these different books. A lot of books have passed my way for me to give meaning and understanding. And I have some very, very vivid dreams. And in some of those, I have connected with quite a few people who have passed. I have no proof, of course. I mean, it could just be my wishful thinking. It could just be, you know, it is a dream. No one can really explain.
Do you feel that your experiences and your collection of other people's experiences have informed your belief system now, or do you think your belief system has always been as it is?
No, it's evolved. It's evolved according to the people that I've met. It's shaped it. It's changed it. It's made me a more benevolent person. It's actually made me very positive. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, I always think to myself, but everything is all right because the universe takes care of it.
So would you say that your experiences and hearing other people's stories has made you believe more in fate?
I would say so, yes. But it's also, you know, when you believe in a God, you also have to believe in the devil, because the nature of reality dictates you have to have, you know, negative and positive in order for things to exist. And something as simple as our eye movements, you know, our eyes are constantly moving and shifting from negative to positive in order for us to be able to see in three dimensions. So I understand that as a fundamental truth of the universe, in that we have to have negative and positive energy in order for things to remain as they are.
And so, I mean, I don't plan on talking particularly about your religious beliefs, because I'm not always sure how helpful that is, actually, to be personally open about that. But one of the things I was thinking about, when we think of a God, we think of something that's more powerful than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we'll think of something, no matter who your God is, whatever the name is. My particular belief is it doesn't really matter what we call the God.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It is something more powerful than ourselves that we look up to, aspire to.
Yes.
And it doesn't really matter what we call it. It's the same principle. And if we all believed in that same principle, it'd be really good and helpful. So so when we're thinking about a God, where does our understanding of ufology, aliens, you mentioned humanoids, how does that center in your understanding of your particular belief?
Truly, it fits. It all fits. Because what we have is a God who not just created us, but has been so creative and so powerful that it is mind-boggling how much he has created that is beyond our vision, beyond our ability to understand, that it is multidimensional and it is so vast that you don't even know where the edge of the universe is. And it comes in so many levels of existence and such a myriad of beings that, you know, we're only touching the surface. We're probably only seeing 1/4-8 of reality, because we are on the lower end of the spectrum. We're only in three dimensions. So it makes sense to me how aliens travel here, you know, way past the speed of light. That is all quantum physics. That's not even Newtonian physics. And that is the God particle. So it makes sense. There is no conflict between religion or science.
And at what point in our evolution do you think that the alternate universes or galaxies or experiences, as in UFOs, were created?
At what point are we there?
At what point were they created? If we had a timeline of our religious understanding, when would that have come into the fore?
Julie, neither you nor I would know. And if I could tell you right now, I would not be sitting here.
You'd be a millionaire somewhere, Adele.
Well, I don't know about that, but that is not a question for me. That is a question for someone who is much, much higher than any of us, and probably much, much higher than anyone who is listening right now. That's a priceless question, and I think in the end we all will find out, and it should be very, very interesting.
What would you say was one of the most frightening or scary experiences paranormally that you've had?
I would say the one that has scared me the most, and this is from a first-person account because I was, you know, probably about 11 at that point. I was in my grandmother's house, and there was a being that was out in the backyard. And we had two servants at the time, my grandmother did. And one came dashing in, totally terrified, because she was trying to feed the cats. The cats were restricted to the outside of the house. And what she saw was something that I will never forget. And apparently, whatever it was, had they dug up his bones. He was buried in the backyard. The house that my grandmother lived in was a house that was built on an unofficial burial ground for the Japanese soldiers.
Okay.
But it was a gaunt man with red eyes that was very, very angry, that was sitting on his haunches, and it was all tattered. He looked like he was starving to death. That same man, the next day at twilight, was running down the driveway at the side of the house, and I happened to be at the open door sitting there, and I saw him run. And he was wearing these, what we call flip-flops in the U.S.
Yes.
And he leaped over the gate, and the flip-flop caught the edge of the top of the gate. So I thought it was a real intruder because there was sound.
Yeah.
Well, my uncle was right outside the gate, and it would have leaped over his head. He would not have missed it. He didn't see anything. He didn't hear anything. I was the only one.
And although that was something that's unnerved you, because you automatically knew that it wasn't in the flesh, it wasn't in our existence, was there anything that, any interaction with him that made you fear?
It was more visceral. I mean, okay. I knew that it was not of this world. I was taken aback that it actually was able to make a sound because the slipper hit the gate. So the first instinct I had was to stand up and say, I think there was a man that was running from the back to the front.
Of course.
And my grandmother said, was he wearing white, like some kind of a long T-shirt that was tattered? I said, yes. Was he really thin, like he had starved? I said, yes. Was his hair cut really, really short? There were marks on it, like he had some kind of disease, I guess. And I said, yes. And she says, oh, yeah, he usually passes by here once a week like that. And then I knew.
Wow, guys. It's been a great conversation. Now, we're getting close to the end. Dell, do you have contact information or a website or something people can find you on?
Well, I can be found on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And it's the name of my dogs, at Fox and Rosanna, and as in and Nancy, Rosanna, Rosanna. I can also be found on Facebook under my name and under Instagram under my name.
Okay. And, of course, the book is available on Amazon and all bookstores. We will have that on our website. And, so anybody wants to find out more? You know, if they're listening to the show, one click will get you the book. Adele, it's been really, really interesting. Any last words before we go?
No. Basically, the book is available on Amazon, as you mentioned. It is on Kindle and paperback. I'm in the process of actually collecting more stories from other people, and I plan to get some stories from overseas as well. And that should hopefully, be in publication next year.
Fantastic. Again, the book we're talking about is Portal. It's a Lifetime of Paranormal Experiences. And like I said, it's right on our website. One click. Thanks again, Adele.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adele.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.